This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Horror, Wine, and Crime with KK and Lo on this, well, Sunday evening for us, whatever day it is for you guys. How goes it, Lo?
Hey girl, hey. So it goes. It goes that it was 46 today, so that's like, okay.
Scorching hot, like scorching. I was like, oh yes. My gosh, let's crank the AC. What the heck?
Of course you would. I was still like looking for my heated blanket, but at least I wasn't shivering much outside.
Right.
Yesterday was Valentine's Day, so happy Valentine's belated to all you lovebirds out there.
Yes.
All our creepies that we love. So husband made me a steak dinner and we watched, it's called Play Dirty with Mark Wahlberg. It's kind of like an assassin's type heist type movie.
Okay.
It was entertaining.
I was gonna say, I was gonna say, I don't think I've heard of that one.
Sure. He's not, you know, he's not the nicest Mark Wahlberg that we've seen, like, but
I feel like we've seen him on both spectrums. He's either like such a nice guy in the movies or like he's a dirtball.
Like in Fear.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was our evening. The kids were, Charlotte was out with a friend and Corbin was out with his girlfriend. So it was a little peaceful at home. We just kind of... Nice. Chilled out and did dinner movie. We tried to get reservations to go out to eat like a couple days before, but everything was already like, and I told him, I said, you know what? I said, I'd rather you just make steaks at home and we can go and lay down and watch a movie and just be comfy. Like, honestly, cause I had to work until 5 o'clock anyway.
Right.
So I was cool with it.
Yeah, exactly. And like Valentine's Day in general, I feel like every place is like insanely packed, but especially it was a Saturday this year. I'm sure all places were just like so busy everywhere.
It really was.
Yeah.
Even my store, which made me happy.
Yes. Lo had a little Galentine's event. I loved it. I brought my sister along. She had a great time too. From my perspective, I think it was a success. Everyone was loving it in the room. They were also loving Lo's playlist. Everybody was singing and like commenting.
Should I tell you the secret?
Yeah, what was it?
It was Paula Abdul Radio on Spotify. So it was just like all like Paula Abdul type vibe music. But like at one point someone's like, can we pause it so we can finish singing the song?
I know, it was so funny. I was like, everyone kept, you could just hear the whole room like humming or singing. I'm like, everyone is loving Lo's playlist right now.
I know, I felt like so honored. I think the funniest part of the night was when the host yelled like B67, the entire room went 6-7. I'm like, okay, these are all parents and teachers. I'm like, they have to be.
Yeah. They all knew it too. They in sync.
Oh my god, it was crazy, but it was fun. Did you win a bingo? I know your sister did. Did you win a plant?
I did not. I did not win a bingo. No, I didn't win anything, but my sister was very excited to win one. She even threw her chair down basically when she got up. She was so excited.
I know. That was so funny. But you got a blind date with a book. So people seem to be happy with my choices, because I was kind of nervous if people were going to be like, is it like something I already read? Is it too old? Is it not brand new enough? And I'm just like, so I just tried to make them pretty romance spray pages, but it seemed like everybody was kind of happy when they were opening them, because I was looking around like, make sure. It's a lot of pressure to pick the books. Like,
yeah. So. Well, we were happy with ours. We were reading the backs of them when we opened them, and I'm excited to read mine.
Very cool. And I'm going to read it with you. That's Kay's pick.
Yes. Yes.
Not by choice, but yeah. And I told you, because it was kind of funny, because her sister was like, are any of these like smut books? And yeah, I made two regular romance, and then I made one a smut section, just because some people like the smut and some people don't. So I figured if someone got one that was smutty, they could just exchange it. And I didn't go like way hard into the smut, because there are some of them, like the one I'm reading, it's pretty intense. But I told her to switch with one of my friends that was out gabbing. I was like, just switch with her. She's like, are you sure? I was like, yeah, I promise. She won't even know. And then as my friend was leaving, and I'm like, Summer, you didn't even open your book. She's like, no, I'm not going to read it. I'm just going to give it to CC. I'm like, see, I told you.
Yeah, that's what she said to us. She was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to give my... or whatever. And in my head I was thinking like, oh, good thing that they switched books then, so that the daughter didn't get the smut book.
Right. I mean, sure, it's fine.
It worked out perfectly.
Yes. We're doing another one in March 12th. Yeah. So we're gonna do Clovers. I don't think there's gonna be books involved. There was a little bit of a hiccup at the end of the night. I mean, nothing major, but I was under the impression that I would get like 70%, and she thought she was getting 70% instead of the 30. And I'm like, I don't know. It's fine. But I just felt a little awkward, because I was like, well, it was kind of my event room, my building. And then like she posted a link and it wasn't working. So I sold every one of the tickets myself. And then I did the blind book with the dates. She did buy all the plants. And she did do the bingo. And she did have the, you know, photographer girl come. So there is that, which I didn't know that girl was coming. But, like, she was supposed to bring a table. She forgot it. She was supposed to give a basket. She forgot it. I got the brownies, desserts, like, everything, tablecloths, chairs. Yeah, so I would
you would get the 70. But so like you, that seems like majority all of things that like you were doing and providing.
And then Holly came in and I asked her, she's like, well, I do it myself. They did bling bingo when they did jewelry. And she said she just hosted it herself. So, and Pat's like, really, what does all it take? Buying the bingo set and providing the prizes? You could do that yourself and just take all the money. So
that's true.
I'm gonna let her do the St. Patrick's Day one. But then how do I say, like, if she says, okay, well, let's plan one for April, what do I say? Oh, here, going forward, I'm just doing it myself. I don't want to sound like a jerk, you know what I mean? But at the same time,
you could just, yeah, I mean, you could definitely just say, you know, that like maybe you're gonna think about it and like what like events you want to do in the future.
But I mean, she'll like see if I post it myself. You know what I mean? If I post another bingo, she's gonna see. So I don't know. I thought about just telling her like, hey, you know, it's nothing, you know, personal, but my husband thinks this is something we could probably just do ourselves. Like,
this podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars. to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Right.
I don't know. I'll figure it out. Or maybe I'll let her keep going with this one. I'm not providing the books. I'm going to let her take more of the lead on it. I'll take my cut and, you know, whatever. But
yeah, that's such a bummer, though, that there was that, like, mix up. Because, like, yeah, if you were providing all that stuff, you should have gotten majority of it, I would think. Like,
I'd rather even work it out with you. Like, Crystal, what Thursday night are you free? Come host this gig with me and I'll give you $150.
Right. Yeah.
I'm sure you won't say no.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because it's not like, and like you said, yes, the plants were awesome and like the bingo was awesome, but like you did all of the like book things and had all of the snacks and drinks and tables and space and literally everything, which is a lot to go into it.
Yeah. So I guess we'll see how this one turns out. Cause I'm like, do plants have that much of a pull for $40 a ticket just to win a plant? I don't know.
I'm not a plant girly, so I'm not the one to ask.
But she said there is. She said people love their plants. Okay. So we'll see. We'll see. Like I said, and I'm not mad at her. I mean, and hopefully she's not mad at me, but it became very awkward. So, I mean, obviously going forward, it has to be, I guess, you know, because even Holly was like, no person should go into somebody's building thinking they're going to get the majority of the half if it's not their building.
Right, because she was just like using your space just to like promote her like plant thing or whatever. It's not like it wasn't like her space and you were just supplying like books.
I don't know. But other than that, it was a great night.
Yes. Yeah. Well, at least for my perspective on my end, I think everything went awesome. It was super fun. You did a really good job, pulling everything together, and it was super fun.
Thanks. And I have 2 new authors coming the first 2 weeks of March. So if y'all are around Oxford on a Saturday, there is Danielle Collins, who is doing a book called Even After Everything. It's about besties. And then there was another one by E.C. Taylor, and it's called Speak with the Dead. And that's like a fantasy type book. So I'm super excited to see how their events turn out as authors. Hopefully I get enough hype and people come in and buy their books and I make them happy and proud.
Yeah, that's so fun. Having like the authors come in for like a meet and greet signing thing. That's awesome.
I mean, who knows? Maybe these two are the next Colleen Hoovers. I don't know.
Hey, you never know.
So with that being said, now that we had currently reading, which I am reading Even After Everything, which is the one by Danielle Collins. And then I am reading The Ritual by Chantal Tesser. And that one is it's very popular. It's very erotic, very dark college romance. Makes Christian Grey seem like he's in the kiddie pool. It's pretty intense and violent and sexual, like right off the bat. It's got it all. So I'll let you know how it goes. I don't know if I'll be done with it quite next week, since I'm reading 2 and that book alone is 525 pages, but we'll see.
Dang, it sounds intense just from the get-go of it, though, from what you've described.
Yeah. So we'll see.
Me and Lo finished Dear Serafina together. the little the novella that I've that I've ventured into with her.
Hey, she's moving up in pages, people. Next one. Well, first we'll go back and we'll say that the Avery Bishop, it's, I mean, it was like Stan. I wasn't completely crazy.
No, yeah, you definitely hit it on the nose for that, especially in the beginning part of it.
Although she didn't get angry that she didn't get replied to. She's even said, oh, you probably aren't even getting these, but that's okay, blah, blah, blah. But I liked how the book was called Dear Serafina, and you did not hear one blurb about who, nothing about the girl that it was to. Like, there was no passage from her, like, at all.
Yeah, I was expecting at some point, like, towards maybe the end, like, Serafina to, like, be sending her a letter or like writing someone an email, because it's all like via communication. The whole book is like either notes or emails or messages, whatever. So I thought at some point like she would pop in, but like, yeah, she never, you just never hear from her the entire book.
Yeah, I thought at the end she was going to find like a stack of them or something, like what are these, or someone was going to bring them to her attention. Or, like, at the very end, it would have her, like, reading the last letter, a couple letters, and then have her put, like, what the fuck? And then, like, they would have left it open for, like, book number two or something like that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So, but we'll see. Yeah. I tried to see if there was going to be a second one, because they did kind of leave it like it could be, you know?
But, yeah, because she didn't even, the whole, like, the longest letter I think there was, it was the last one. And she said at the end that she wasn't even sending it. She's like, you know, one day if, like, we cross paths, if she makes it in acting or whatever, I'll show you this letter maybe. But I'm like, dang, because when I was first reading it and getting into it, like at the last letter, I was like, why is she sending this? Like, they're totally gonna trace it back and figure out like that she did all of this. But then she said she's not even sending it, and I'm like, oh, okay, so she's still getting away with it.
Yeah,
but it was good. I liked the twists and turns of it.
Yeah, I did too. Like, you didn't even see it coming. Mm-mm. And then it went like from, it switched it up from like the grocery store's perspective, the clerk, of how it all played out, and her friend. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, switched up different point of views. I liked it. Good pick, then, Wow. Good pick.
For March, we're going to do probably the whole month of March, maybe even a little bit longer, because I'm a little bit behind, and Crystal's tackling like a 300-page book.
It'll take me an extra minute.
You never know. You might start it and love it and not want to put it down. We don't know.
That's true.
But this one is called Loving Romeo. I want to say it was by Sarah.
I can't remember the author.
Sarah Palvo or Palvo, something like
something,
that.
Something like that, yeah.
So we'll be excited to see how that works. I think that one's just like a romance novel. So,
yeah, I read the back of it. It sounds like a cutesy, like, sweet little romance type book.
Something you'll see on the book. Lifetime Channel.
Yeah. The book itself is really pretty, though. I like the cover and pages and everything.
And this is how you can tell Kay's a new reader, because she says, oh, I'll bring you those other ones back if you want. I'm like, girl, those are your trophies. You put them on a shelf.
Well, you gave them to me. So I was like, well, if you want to put them in your used section so that you can make money off of them, I totally have no problem doing that.
This is the beginning of you building your library.
It's slowly stacking up.
See?
I'll order it from thinnest to thickest, just like my progression over time.
I'll bring you it. It's like this thick.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. Enough with the book talk. So this story I thought was kind of funny. The story is not funny. But
this podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Because this happens so often, I figured I'm going to go with the theme we have going the last few weeks.
It doesn't have to do with a suitcase. I'm just curious.
It does.
Oh my gosh, I knew it.
I was like, you know what? Why not? Because I just watched a Netflix movie of it not long ago. And so I'm like, you know what? I was like, Crystal just did one. And then, so yeah, right here, my notes, it says, I know KK just did a suitcase story the other day. But, and I did one. I did Sarah Boone. She was the one where she decided to put her drunk boyfriend in the suitcase, told him they were playing hide and seek, and then she just left him there to die. So I figured we're on a roll with suitcases. Like, I figured, you know, what the hell? Let's just add one more. And maybe we can change our podcast name to Suitcase Killers. And then literally, we can just take the rest of the year and do nothing but suitcase murder stories.
I was just going to say, I'm like, how many suitcase stories are there? There's probably way even more, I'm sure.
I was shocked when we did the first one a little and know that we would find more.
So, it's crazy.
Maybe Sarah Boone set a stage. I don't know.
Yeah.
But this one is the story of Melanie McGuire. Like I said, it was on Netflix recently. They put a movie out about it, and I did watch it. Actually, my daughter even watched it before me, which is kind of funny. And so I don't know if you can believe everything in the movies are true. Watching this movie, I do believe that she did it, but, and I know, like, I can understand because she was probably pushed to a certain point, but I also believe that there's got to be another solution besides murder, because murder just, it's just wrong, like, you know.
I feel like in most situations, I would say like 90, I would, what do I want to say? Like 98.9% of situations, there's a better solution than murder, right?
So I'm going to tell you the facts, and then I'll tell you a little bit of like some of the discrepancies that I won't say discrepancies, because the research at the computer is probably more what really happened versus the stuff that they put in the movie. But we'll talk about it as we go. So her maiden name was actually Melanie Slate, and she was born October 8th, 1972, and she is from Ridgewood, New Jersey. After she graduated high school, she enrolled herself in Rutgers University with a double major in math and psychology. She graduated in 1994 and then attended nursing school, where she graduated second in her class in 97. Her mom described her as every mother's dream as a good girl. She never caused trouble. She was a great student, and she was always supportive when it came to friends and family. Now, those qualities are also the qualities that drew Bill McGuire to her. They went out. They fell in love over time. Dare I say the cliche? They were the picture-perfect romance couple.
They always are.
Until they're not.
Until they're not.
But at the time, they felt like they were each other's equals. In 1999, they did get married. Bill's sister said it was perfect because they wanted the same things in life. Less than a year after getting married, they had their first son. Bill began teaching computer science at the local technical college, and Melanie went on to work at a reproductive medicine associates, which is one of the biggest fertility clinics in the country. A woman named Jennifer Kalis, she was one of the patients at the fertility clinic where Melanie worked. She said that Melanie was more than a skilled nurse to her. She was a friend, a confidant, and a steady hand when she was struggling with fertility. She was one of the counselors at this clinic, so she guided her patients through some of the most intimate and difficult issues they had ever to have to go through. By 2004, the couple had two sons and had been married for 5 years. They were living in a townhouse in Woodbridge Township in New Jersey. The apartment was supposed to be temporary, just a minor living situation until they saved up money to buy a house with more room for the boys to play. And in a statement that had said a million times, everything on the surface looked like everything was completely normal between Bill and Melanie. But on April 28th, 2004, the couple closed on the purchase of their first home. Now, I want to state that in the movie, it shows that he's already at this point a gambling addict. They saw signs of it very early on. They called him. She would call him on it, but he'd play it very cool, like, nah, I'll get it back. I mean, he would lose big chunks. Like, there's a scene where they go and get a room at the casino, and she goes upstairs to go to bed because it's late, and it's like 4 or 5 in the morning, and he's just coming in, and he kind of like lost everything that he was playing, and he's like, I'll get it back. It's no big deal, blah, blah, blah. It's just fun. It's just fun money. It's just fun money, blah, blah, blah.
Gosh.
And so very quickly, she was kind of like raising an eyebrow, like, you know, I don't know. But they don't, during this trial, they don't focus on that a whole lot. It doesn't seem like, but in the movie, it made it sound like he didn't want to move. He wanted to stay in the apartment because the bigger house meant bigger mortgage, which meant less money for him to gamble with. And she was pushing to get the house because she wanted to tie up his money in a mortgage so he would stop gambling.
I see.
I mean, and that their family was growing and needed more room anyway, but.
Right.
So they also didn't show that he was also kind of like very women friendly. She caught him cheating pretty early on. You know, he kind of reminds me of his character. The guy from The Wedding Singer that Drew Barrymore was supposed to marry, but didn't.
Ooh, creepy vibes.
Yeah, just, you know, flashing money, women, you know, just cheating and
just dirtball,
kind of cocky. And yeah, like that's the kind of vibe I got watching the movie.
Okay.
But Bill didn't waste any time. He set up utilities, calling friends, very excited. He wanted everyone to know the good news that he'd bought a house. Now, the sellers called Bill later that night, but he didn't answer the phone and he did not return the call. And that was something that was pretty unusual for him because he would normally call back within a few minutes. Jennifer, the patient also from the fertility clinic, she also tried calling Melanie that night with no answer. And again, the situation where Melanie would typically call right back, she didn't return her phone call either. No one heard from Bill. So it was about after 6 p.m. that night. He didn't show up to work the next day. On April 30th, 2004, Melanie McGuire filed a restraining order against her husband. And see, again, this is why I hate when movies come out about stuff, because you don't know what to believe.
I know. There's always different like aspects to it where it's like, wait, did that actually happen or is that just for the movie?
Because in the movie, by this time, she'd caught him cheating. She even moved his car when she found him going into the motel with a woman. She moved his car and placed it someplace else and then went home. And he came home and he was like all pissed off about it because he knew she did it. And she's like, well, what are you talking about? I thought you were, you know, at a work thing, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, don't F with me. And he got kind of loud and kind of, you know, you could see it starting to unfold. I can't remember if he actually choked her or did something. I can't remember if he did that time or not. But you could see the pattern of where this was going as this relationship. So then she started to have an affair with a doctor. And this was all before they even signed the papers in the house. Now, I'm sitting here thinking, if you're a nurse-ish, you're a nurse of some sort because you're working in a fertility clinic, I feel like you could get a divorce. If you've already been married, you'll get some kind of settlement on it. And I think you'd still be stable having that kind of a career to be able to take care of yourself and two kids, even if you got a smaller house and a smaller apartment, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it would for sure be doable.
So why not just leave them? Why do we have to chance barter, you know? But
right.
Here we are. We wouldn't be telling the story if it was all, you know, strawberry shortcake land.
Right.
But so she does start up an affair with this doctor. And then she also alleged that a couple of arguments the night before he went missing, that they had a big argument over dryer sheets. She said that the dryer sheets, Bill hated them, and she'd been using them forever, so she doesn't understand why all of a sudden it was a big deal. But he got enraged over the dryer sheets. He slammed her up against the doorway and shoved the dryer sheet in her mouth and then slapped her across the face.
Oh my gosh, all over a dryer sheet. How dramatic.
Okay. Melanie said that she was so scared that she hid in the bathroom with one of her sons. After that, Melanie said that she heard him leave from the she heard him packing his bag, and then she heard him leave, and that was the last time she heard from him. And because of the fight and the restraining order, she didn't file a missing report because she hadn't heard from him, and she just assumed that he was just gone because they got in a fight, and it was just kind of like, what the fuck ever, you know, like she didn't care. He didn't care.
Yeah.
On May 5th, 1 week after Bill allegedly packed his bags and left his family, a couple of fishermen and their kids saw a dark green suitcase floating in the Cheapskate Bay. When they opened it, they found a man's dismembered legs that had been cut off at the knee. 5 days later, another suitcase washed up on the shore of Fisherman's Island, and that suitcase had the torso of a white male that had been severed from the waist down. The torso still had the head and arms attached. Police found bullet holes in one of the torsos and one in the head. It would later be determined that the bullet holes came from a .38 caliber. And on May 16th, a third suitcase with the man's thighs and pelvis was found. Now, I don't understand why these people keep taking the suitcases and throwing them in the water, because you got to know eventually it's going to come back.
Yeah, it's going to wash up. It's going to float up. Like, it's, unless you're anchoring that shit down, like, it's coming back.
I know. Cinder blocks, people, cinder blocks.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. And the multiple suitcases too. It's like, ugh.
Yeah.
Really split them up there, but all in the same place. It's like they were just, here's one clue, and then another day, here's another clue.
Clearly, she didn't listen to the Thanksgiving episodes we put out.
She did not.
But she would have known a garbage disposal would have been the way to go.
Right.
So when this sketch came across TV, Susan Rice had her heart sink to her stomach. She instantly recognized the sketch as Bill McGuire from her former Navy buddy. It had been, at this time, almost a month since Bill allegedly packed up and left home. So the Virginia police drove to Jersey to inform Melanie McGuire that, so when they told her, they said that she appeared to be shaken. She didn't cry. But again, you're like, people go in shock. You know the whole thing. You never know how they're going to act. It could, I mean, how many times have we said this or heard people act a certain way, calling 911, and you're like, they don't seem that distraught. But so they give her the benefit of the doubt. But to hear that you found your husband in different suitcases chopped up, that delivery you don't expect. So unless you did do it, you would think you'd be a little bit more like
freaked out.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And I guess that would be a big shock to hear, but like just the violence of it, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like I've always said, it's hard to like fully make a huge judgment call on people's reactions because I have no idea how I would react in that situation. And everybody, like, you know, handles things differently. But that's like, if you did not know that that was happening, that I would think I would vomit. Like, I think if someone told me like that's what happened to him, I would probably like projectile vomit.
Probably. Yeah. Pass out, get numb, you know.
Yeah.
So Melanie regurgitated that she had not heard from her husband in 3 weeks. And by this point, she had filed for a divorce and moved into a new apartment. She had put up their home for sale. She put clothing in the trash bags and just given them all away. So the police went and searched their old townhouse. Okay. So guilty or not, 3 weeks, that's fast. That looks bad either way.
Mm-hmm. Like, it does.
Your husband's missing for 3 weeks and you're already like trying to sell the house. Okay. First off, you need to wait a couple months to at least look like you can't pay the mortgage. Then that's when you move out because you can't afford it. But you got to make it look like a struggle. That was like one of your first big mistakes was like.
It's like so funny because I'd see it that way. But then at the same time, I'm thinking, well, if she didn't actually do it, let's just play devil's advocate or whatever. Maybe she was like so enraged what he did to her. And then he left that she was just like, F you, I never want you in my life again. So I'm going to change my life as quickly as I can because I want nothing to do with this guy ever again. So it could be that, but probably not.
But if his name's on the mortgage too, you would need both of you to be able to sell it. She wouldn't just be able to sell it from underneath him.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. So like if you're married and both names are on the mortgage, I'm pretty sure you both have to sign off the rights to sell the house.
How did she sell it? Did she forge his signature?
It just said that she put it up for sale. I don't know if it actually sold or not.
Okay.
But you would think I would have at least just packed my stuff up and go stay with my parents and or get an apartment, whatever, but just don't do anything with the house.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQBar plant protein bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQBars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQBar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Let it kind of sit, you know.
Simmer,
what I mean? Yeah. By this point, though, she had already repainted. She was ready for a new tenant. So there was nothing there. There wasn't anything that could be found. When Melanie was asked where she thought her husband might be, she didn't hesitate. And she said, oh, probably Atlantic City. He goes there a lot. He's a serious gambling problem. She maintained that if something happened to Bill, it was probably someone he owed money to because he had a lot of history of gambling. Now, in the movie, they did do kind of a check on this, and they did say that he was not liked very well. He was kind of a dick in that area of, you know, like most of his guy friends and everybody thought he was an asshole. So he wasn't exactly Mr. Popularity. Maybe okay. With the ladies because he had the blame, but again, so police are like, okay, well, at least we have a place to start. So they head to Atlantic City. They find Bill's car in a tow lot. And inside, although the interior was spotless, there was a vial of chloral hydrate, which is it's pretty much a powerful sedative. The prescription had been filled near the couple's home, less than a mile away from the daycare where the kids attended. And the prescription belonged to a patient who was seen at the office where Melanie worked. So she didn't even write it. It wasn't written to Bill or Melanie. It was written to some random patient. So basically it's a sleep medication. But how did it end up in his car?
Right.
So, yeah, it was liquid with a needle. It was like it was ready to go. At this point, everything starts to kind of unravel for Melanie. When the doctors who wrote the prescription was questioned, he was like, yeah, that wasn't me. I never wrote that. Someone forged this. So police start to dig further into the relationship between Melanie and Dr. Bradley Miller, the physician who wrote the prescription. Police uncovered numerous late night phone calls between the two and the details of their three year long affair quickly emerged. Like 3 years at this point, if you've been having an affair for 3 years, just leave your dang husband.
Like, yeah, that's a long time. Like you're in a full on relationship. Like,
right.
3 years.
And he's cheating on you. You're cheating on him. Like, what are y'all holding on for? Yeah. You know,
crazy.
So he said that on Bill's disappearance, Melanie had called him to tell him that she was going to leave and that she didn't want to take the step of buying the house and everything with someone who didn't love or want him. And the whole time he's like, I got to go. My wife's here. My wife's on the other line. And like, oof, rough.
Yeah.
But in the movie, it makes it sound like this Bill guy is like her biggest supporter. They meet at the hotel. He's like loving on her, doting on her, saying you'll be fine. I promise you. Like, and then later it has her, he calls with the police behind him. Obviously it's set up, trying to get her to admit. And she didn't. She's just like, I didn't do this. I would never do that. You know, he has problems and it was probably this and that and blah, blah, blah. And so I don't know if she knew that the police had got to him or if she was just really trying to convince him too that she didn't do it. But in the movie, it sounds like he was really upset that there's a chance that she could have done that. So I don't know. And the movie made it sound like he really did care for her more than just, I mean, 3 years, that's more than just a side piece. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's like that's literally a relationship. 3 years, that's crazy.
Yeah. So the next day, Melanie called Dr. Miller and told him about the fight. She'd got the restraining order. She told Dr. Miller that the fight had turned physical and that she was concerned for her safety. She told him on April 29th that she'd driven to Atlantic City to look for Bill. And when she got there, she found his car at the Taj Mahal Casino. And in a petty move, she said that she moved it to the Flingo Motel out of spite, which was about a mile and a half away from the Taj Mahal. Apparently, she was so tired at that point that she took a cab home. But because she had slept at the cab ride, she wasn't tired anymore. So she got home. She took another cab back to Atlantic City so she could get her Nissan Pathfinder. And then she left it at the Taj Mahal.
What the heck?
Now, see, again, this just was like,
it's messy.
Why didn't you just move the car? Like, you want to make a point. Why does it have to be that far away? Move the car like five blocks. You know what I mean?
Right.
Walk back to your car, get in your car, and go back home. Stupid mistakes, because it was an hour and a half drive one way.
That's crazy.
So she drove an hour and a half to Atlanta, took a cab back for an hour and a half, then turned around, drove an hour and a half back, moved the car, and then drove another hour and a half back to go back home.
Like, that's insane.
6 hours worth of driving. Like,
that doesn't make you look like a reliable, credible person, but just is like wild.
Plus, I mean, cab money for an hour and a half drive.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
Especially if it was late at night, too.
Yeah. And she would go on and tell Miller that she made two more trips back to Atlantic City to look for Bill, including one time when she went with her stepdad. Now, but remember, she originally told the police that she suspected he might be in Atlantic City. But she wasn't sure. And here all along, she at least knew where his car was.
Right. It's like, why wouldn't you tell them that immediately if you had nothing to hide?
Yeah. She was like, yeah, no, I don't know. I don't know. So eventually she admitted to it. She's like, yeah, I moved it. At this point, we're months into the investigation and Melanie is still maintaining that Bill must have been murdered by someone who owed money to him. No surprise, the police checked with the cab companies and they saw that there was no cab fares for the night of April 30th, the night she took those cab rides. Now records determine that the whole thing was a lie because they do keep records of that. The most damning piece of evidence against Melanie was when James Finn, who was an attending nurse, he went to school with her. He testified that his longstanding relationship of unreturned romantic interest with Melanie. So like, I loved her my whole life, but she didn't love me back.
Oh, sad.
But she was like, no, I don't like you like that, but I'm just going to keep you on the back burner. I'm just going to talk to you. He was like her backup. You know what I mean? Probably taking advantage of his crush on her.
For sure. Yeah.
The two remained friends over the years. They stayed in contact. They would send emails back and forth. Melanie told them in mid-April, like, she's like, me and Bill are having, you know, we're not having intimacy. The marriage isn't good. It's falling apart. She joked about owning a gun. She said that Bill was acting strangely and he was drinking and she was pretty afraid for her safety. So Finn was like, hey, this is what you need to do. You need to go buy your own gun. You should have a gun to protect yourself. So on April 26th, 2 days before Bill disappeared, Melanie went and bought a Taurus 38 revolver gun at a gun shop in Pennsylvania. It's like, girl, like, checkmate for the detectives, okay? Like,
for real.
She still had a Pennsylvania issued driver's license that had her aunt's address on it, so she used that for identification. She wasn't even trying to hide it, the sales receipt, nothing. So it showed that she purchased it and then something else for $9.95. The owner of the gun shop testified that there were two types of ammunition in the shop that were listed for that price. So likely she bought the gun and the ammunition.
Man.
He remembered the handgun and ammunition given it to Melanie because she was a well-dressed woman and because she was the first nurse that he ever bought a handgun from. Like, how much small talk are you giving this guy? It's not really small talk. Obviously, you're telling your whole dang life.
Like, I know, he knows he knows so much inside info.
If you're about to commit murder, you might not want to say much, you know what I mean?
Right. There was no level of discreetness there.
Police also determined that the blanket that Bill's remains were wrapped in were blankets that were at the doctor's office where Melanie worked.
Girl.
I know, right? You want to feel bad for her, but like, oh my gosh. Ugh. So, in a very cool use of science and technology, the trash bags that remains were in, they were the trash bags wrapped in blankets stuck to the suitcase, and the trash bags that had the remains in them were also determined to have been manufactured on the same assembly line within hours from the ones that were originally at Melanie's house. Now, how they went into that much detail, by God, but they traced trash bags back. But the funny thing is she had given the box of trash bags to one of her friends. Like,
are you serious?
Her friend's like, okay. Now her friend's like, I got these trash bags. I don't know if this is relevant, but here you go. And they're like, this is very irrelevant, ma'am.
This is super relevant. Thank you.
And I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, man, like, I don't know how close of friends they were, but like, If I gave you trash bags because I took out my husband, or even if there was suspicion, like, I don't know if I would, I guess it depends on how close we were. Like, it was me and you. I might not offer, like, drive to the police station and offer information. I won't lie to them. If they ask me, I'll probably tell the truth, you know, because I don't want to perjure myself. But I don't think if I'm nowhere on the radar, if I'm going to just go and be like, oh, hey, did you want these trash bags? Like,
right. I feel like
thanks for having my back. Thanks for having my back.
I feel like she did her dirty, like, by giving her those.
I know. I mean,
like, setting her up or something.
And if the guy was really a big douchebag and did all the things, then, like, yeah, no, whatever. Like, she shouldn't have murdered him, but let them figure it out. Like, if they ask me, fine, but I ain't going out of my way.
Right, exactly. Jeez.
Police also found that Melanie had tried to call Easy Pass, which is the toll road that you have to pay charges for when you cross over. And she entered multiple times back and forth to Atlanta. And a couple days after, Melanie tried to have the charges reversed. And even her stepfather called, and he tried to have the charges reversed. But Easy Pay was like, no, nope, you did the drive. You got to pay the toll, okay? You know, dollar bill, y'all. You got to pay them. And seriously, though, it was only like 90 cents each way.
Oh, geez.
But I don't think it was the money that they were trying. I think she was trying to get it off her record. I think she was trying to make the paper trail disappear.
That would make more sense, yeah.
What would be my thinking? I don't think it was $1.80.
Right. Yeah, no.
On June 2nd, 2005, more than a year after Bill was murdered, Melanie thought she was living her best life. She started mornings by dropping her kids off at daycare and preschool. Well, after exiting the oldest son's preschool, police emerged from the bushes like a sting operation to arrest her. Why? Just like, why do we need to be in the bushes at the preschool? Like, why do we have to make that dramatic? Like, you can't just be like, hi, ma'am, can you come with us? Like, why do we have to, like, seriously surround the school and hide in trees for one woman who doesn't see it coming?
Like, why at the preschool too? It's like, is that necessary?
That's what I'm thinking. It's like, not only does this little boy have to watch her mom get arrested, but like, what if his classmates were all there? Then all, like, the rest of his life, these classmates are gonna be like, you remember when your mom got arrested?
Right. You
know, is your mom going to jail? Like, he's got to go through all that shit now. You might just take him to a different school. You might as well just change school.
And his dad just died too. Like, that's just too much for him.
Dad never come home, and now mom's going to prison
right in front of his eyes. It's like, okay, we could have maybe went to her work, or like waited until she was away from the schools, like something like that.
Yeah, for sure. So they're like, I don't know, maybe they're like, well, she's been dicking us around for a year, let's try to embarrass her the best way we can. I don't know. So she was taken into custody and charged with first degree murder. She posted $750,000 bail, pled not guilty. Once again, she was arrested in October. So on October 11, 2005, after a four-count indictment came down from the grand jury, the charges were first-degree murder, second-degree possession of a weapon for an unlawful purpose, second-degree discretion of human remains, and third-degree perjury. Her bail was raised to $2.1 million. But once again, she posted bail and was released from jail on a $750,000 bail. Who keeps having this $750,000 to keep posting for her?
Right.
So another year later, second indictment was handed up accusing Melanie of writing a series of letters aimed at getting police off her trail during the investigation. She was trying to fabricate communication that was being framed. So on Halloween 2006, she entered another not guilty plea for charges and posted a $10,000 bail. Once again, she was released just a few days later. Like, things are starting to get really bad here. Pretty serious. She hired a whole new defense team. Her trial finally started 2 years later, March 5th, 2007. Her trial began at Middlesex County Courthouse. the trial begins with prosecutors were like, okay, the motive is she wanted to have this new life with her lover who probably wasn't going to leave his wife for her. And I'm thinking, like, are they not going to talk about, like, his affair? How come that's not getting brought up? Like, he's cheating and the gambling and I don't know. They just made it sound like she was the only one having an affair, and that kind of aggravated me.
Yeah, because, like, he was doing shit, too, and, like, being, like, clearly abusive towards her, or, like, very aggressive at the very least.
Yeah. But Melanie McGuire persisted in claiming that she was innocent, and her husband had become increasingly moody and unpredictable. All of this on top of him being a compulsive gambler, and he was paranoid, and he had a feeling that people were watching him, and she thinks those are the people that killed him. The prosecution called 64 witnesses, and the defense called 16 additional witnesses. 21 witnesses who testified were qualified by the court as experts in a variety of fields and specialties, like the trash bag situation.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar Sampler Pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
That was like deep down. And then she's like, they called the state police, who was a computer expert. They testified that she examined computers, the cell phone, that Melanie McGuire had used her personal desktop computer to search things like this in between April 11th and April 26th. She searched undetectable poisons, state gun laws, instant poison gun laws in Pennsylvania, toxic insulin levels, fatal insulin doses, instant undetectable poisons, how to commit suicide, how to commit murder, how to purchase hunting rifles in New Jersey. So she searched sedatives, tranquilizers, barbiturates, pharmacy, chloroform. I mean,
anything you could think of, it sounds like.
Obviously, she doesn't know how to clear her cookies.
No.
So she, you know, even looked up, like, can you get it at Walgreens? So there's just a lot was stacking up against her. And the reference to the gun laws were like, to know, like, she and her friend had talked about this. He was helping her with that, husband. Oh, hundreds of exhibits were admitted into evidence and displayed to the jury. Now, after 23 days of testimony, 3 days of deliberation, the jury convicted Melanie McGuire on all 4 charges, the first indictment, and then acquitted her of the charges of the second indictment. Melanie's sentence of the court merged the weapons count with the murder charge and sentenced her to life in prison, subject to provisions of the No Early Release Act, meaning that she's not ineligible for parole for 63 years and 9 months of the murder charge. They then sentenced her to a concurrent term of 10 years for desecrating the remains of her husband and consecutive term of 5 years for perjury charge. And then additional 2.5 years that sentence to be served before she's eligible for parole. So that adds up to like 100 years. And because she sought him up, which they found parts in the car. But before I keep going, like 100 years for what she did. Like, I get murder and I get that she kind of cut him up. But we've talked about stories. We've heard stories. We've seen people get off and out of prison probably for more. I don't know. I just feel like 100 years is very intense for this woman.
That is a life sentence. Like, you might as well just call it life sentence because that's what it is. Like,
did this judge have like a personal grudge against her? Like, most murder charges are like 25 to life. Like, right. They want full on, like, you get 100 years. Like,
yeah, like you said, we've seen so many cases that seem just way more like evil behind it, you know, like just horribly bad intentions behind it. And then they get less time than her.
Yeah. And I feel like I do get that the cutting the limbs off is very morbid and very disturbing. But once she murdered him, she couldn't murder him even more. Like, once he's murdered, no matter how she did it.
Right. It's not like he was alive. She was cutting him, like, you know, so he wasn't like feeling it and being tortured, essentially.
I know. And it sounds like, I know it probably sounds like I'm like, oh, you know, she should get off with a hand slap. That's not what I'm saying.
No, not at all.
I'm just saying, like, maybe check in with her at 25 years, 30 years, like, you know, and see what's going on. I don't think like 100 years. I think that was a little like, especially if she is telling the truth of the gambling and the abuse part. We don't know, obviously, because the only other person involved is dead. But in my mind, like, something had to push her to that, to murder, other than just he's out gambling. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, because I feel like unless you're like actually there's something like mentally wrong with your brain where you're like a psychopath or something, people aren't just out here like typically, I'll say, on, you know, for the most part, just murdering to murder over like small stuff.
Yeah.
Like, people usually get like pushed to like where they're driven to that point, I guess, unless, like I said, they're psychos. But
and she didn't do her homework very well. I mean, the computer search, the buying the gun, the affair. I mean, I guess maybe when she started the affair, she didn't predict murder would be in her future. I don't know. But the prescription, you know, forging, so she cleaned her house spotless where they found no signs of him in the house. But then she drove his car and parked it somewhere. But this is the gross part was they found what looked like sawdust footprint in his car that matched hers. But it wasn't sawdust. It was bone dust.
Ew, that's so gross.
I know, right? They called it skin sawdust.
Ew. Yeah. So icky.
So to the naked eye, it looks spotless, but there's really human flakes all over his car.
Oh my gosh. Gross.
Yeah. I know, right? They said that it was likely that his murder had been... And dismemberment took place over 3 days because the legs showed evidence that they had been like refrigerated or exposed to the cold, and that she had likely had the help of an accomplice, but no one has ever been charged as an accomplice. I don't know who you could get to help you accomplish that. I do feel like she probably did it by herself.
Yeah, the only guess I would have would be her like affair doctor guy. But I don't even think so. I think she just did it probably herself, like you said.
Yeah, especially if he has another family going on, you know?
Yeah, that would...
I mean, who knows, but I doubt it.
Shortly after her conviction, but before she was sentenced, Melanie McGuire appeared for an appeal for a new trial on the basis of the story of the jailhouse informant, Christopher. They did use that her husband was deeply in debt and may have been killed in Atlantic City by mobs. However, prosecutors established that the informant was, quote, entirely incredible and routinely an inhabitual fabricates stories. According to New Jersey State Police investigation, before the informant recanted and accused Melanie's attorney of more perjury, so the story was debunked and the request for a new trial was withdrawn. On July 19, 2007, at the age of 34, she was sentenced. Her appeal was affirmed on March 16, 2001, that she must serve more than 63 years before she's eligible for parole. Kind of hope she like lives it out just to appeal at like age 100, just so she can like, fuck you.
Right, exactly.
Not that she deserves to get away with murder, but just like you want to pile on extras just because.
Right. She's wheels out of there.
Right. She tried to appeal again on September 11th, 2011, but the same New Jersey Supreme Court was like, no, stop, you're not getting out of here. But she tried to appeal one more time on April 29th, 2014. She filed a motion to post-conviction relief. So this has been dubbed the suitcase murder, and it has been depicted in numerous TV shows, including Snapped, Dateline, 48 Hours, Deadly Affairs, and Forensic File. She inspired the Lifetime movie called The Suitcase Killer. She did do a 2020 interview, and she still remains that he was killed by the mob and that she had nothing to do with it. Which, I mean, what if? What if she bought the gun, did all the stuff, was going to kill him, but then somebody beat him to the punch?
That would be actually wild.
Right?
But that would be wild. I don't think that's probably what happened, but that would probably be wild.
But like I said, watching the movie, you almost kind of root for her a little bit, even though murder is wrong. And then you have to tell yourself, murder is wrong. Like, why do you want her to not get caught? But do you ever have those movies like where you
it's
know
like you the show you sometimes?
And you're like, you well, he I don't know, I kind of wanted him to get caught, but
I feel like more season one because he was still like fresh. Until, like, the end, really, I would say, where I was like, oh, wait, he's real crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think of another instant.
Or, like, Chuck Bass in Gossip Girl. He's actually, like, pretty terrible, but you love him the entire, not the entire show, more towards the middle and end of this show, but.
Like Dexter.
Yeah, like him, too.
Like, you know murder is wrong, but he's taken out people that beat the system, like, but he's taken out people that are murderers and child rapists and rapists. And so he's kind of like,
he's like a Robin Hood kind of.
Yeah. Like a Batman who takes out bad people.
Right.
No, it's like, you really, I don't know. Like, I don't know why I found myself like, God, I hope she really didn't do it, but. And this is why it's tough to watch some of these movies, because then it leaves you feeling in a way like the stuff that they add in the movies, was that true? Did that really happen? Or was that added for a drama for the movie? Because they're not talking about it deep down into the research on the computer that we do. So it's like, the fuck?
I know. Sometimes the movies make it tough because like they add all this like emotional pull to the movies, like with the music and the characters and the storyline and everything. But in real life, if you were to look at the situation, you might have a completely different outlook on it, but the movie just pulls at your heartstrings.
I know. Yeah. But dang, that's Melanie McGuire.
Another suitcase killer, man.
Another one for the books.
We gotta start tallying these up. There's right? Too many.
I know.
People, this is getting cliche. Don't ever use suitcases anymore because we got enough stories of these.
Right. And watch what garbage bags you use.
Yeah, so for real. And if you're throwing a suitcase into the water, add some weight to it because they're going to come back right back up.
Cinder blocks, dude. Cinder right. blocks. And if you're going across state lines, check that Easy Pay.
Yep, it'll track you down.
See, we're here to help you guys get away with murder.
Right.
Apparently, that's our PSA at the end of this episode.
I know. As we're saying this, I'm like, why are we giving tips? We shouldn't be giving tips. Man, that's so funny, though. When you first said, like, it was like a theme, staying on theme, I was like, I wonder if it's a suitcase-based story. And it was.
Yeah. Well, I was going to do, and I might try to go back, but because they had, I just seen an article recently, because we did the JC, my Lord, I need to go to bed. The JC Duggard story, the girl that was kidnapped for 20 years.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And I was going to do it on the lady, because there's an article that said like she'd recently reached out to her daughter, but her daughter is like, gross, no, I don't want nothing to do with you, like we're done. And then there's articles that said like, did she have a darker hidden past more than we actually know? But then when I tried to look for like all the stuff that I seen, you know, weeks ago, now I can't find it, so I'll have to see if it pops back up. But there was some sites that said, was she a victim or was she like from her husband? Was she going along with it because she was scared of her husband, or was she just as sick as he was? So I don't know. But then I remembered that I had just watched this and I was like, maybe I can talk about Melanie. So
yeah, definitely. No, it was a good one. It's so crazy. I'll have to watch that. You said it was on Netflix?
Yeah. We also have to watch, are you going to watch the not Deadpool. They called him Deadpool.
Oh, Wade Wilson.
Yes. I just found out he had a doco. I found that on accident. I was like, I don't know. I might have to watch this. Like,
I know. Is it new? Did they just release it?
It has to.
I haven't seen that.
Because yeah, his trial was just like, what, last year?
Oh, yeah. So they probably did just release it, like, not at least not that long ago. That's so crazy.
Yeah.
Anytime he pops up, I'm like, oh, this guy.
He never fully goes away, I feel like.
No, he always just randomly will keep popping up no matter what. It's like, what the heck?
Because I feel like there's something else that we were like, oh, my God, Wade.
Yeah, not that long ago, too.
Yeah.
Freaking Wade Wilson, man.
Yep.
But yes, good suitcase story, Lo. We're adding it to our suitcase repertoire.
Thanks. I can't wait to see what you bring to the table next week.
Well, I can guarantee it probably won't be a suitcase story, but if something comes my way, I might just have to. But yes, we shall see.
I think you'll find something better and more on the edge of our seats. You'll
get it's a carry-on killer, not a suitcase.
Oh my God, that's funny.
We just become a travel crime. It's not even traveling, but like travel luggage. Crime cases.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in and thanks for listening on this wonderful winter night.
Yes.
So as we say at Horror, Wine, and Crime, we got to go.
And stay creepy.
Bye.
Bye.